My son's screaming seemed to go on for a cruelly long time. I remember wondering if my mind would shatter with the noise, like a wine glass broken by a soprano. In fact, a former colleague of Andrew's, a war reporter who had been in Iraq and Darfur, did call me a few days later with the names of a combat fatigue counselor he used. "That's kind of you," I told him, "but I haven't been at war." At the graveside, when the screaming was over, I picked up Charlie and held him on my front, with his head resting on my shoulder. He was exhausted. Through the eye holes of his bat mask, I could see his eyelids drooping. I watched the other mourners filing away in a slow line toward the car park. Brightly colored umbrellas broke out above the somber suits. It was starting to rain. Little B stayed behind with me. We stood by the side of the grave, and we stared at each other. "Thank you," I said.
"It is nothing," said Little B. "I just did what anyone would do."
"Yes," I said, "except that everyone else didn't." Little B shrugged.
"It is easier when you are from outside."
I shivered. The rain came down harder. "This is never going to end," I said. "Is it, Little B?"
"However long the moon disappears, some day it must shine again. That is what we used to say in my village.
April showers bring May flowers. That's what we used to say in mine." We tried to smile at each other. I never did drop my own clay into the grave. I couldn't seem to put it down either. 2 hours later, alone for a moment at the kitchen table of our house, I realized I was still gripping it. I left it there on the tablecloth, a small beige lump on top of the clean blue carton. When I came back a few minutes later, someone had been past and tidied it. A few days later, the obituary in the Times noted that there had been poignant scenes at their former columnist's funeral. Andrew's editor sent me the cutting in a heavy cream envelope with a crisp white compliments slip.